Thanks. I'll be talking about Census, a membership management system that's designed for large-scale distributed systems. And this is joint work at MIT with James, Barbara, Raluca, and Abhijit. So you probably don't need me to tell you that distributed systems are becoming increasingly common, and they're running at increasingly large scale. You know, we heard yesterday about services that are running on multiple data centers with tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of nodes, and this trend seems only likely to increase as we have things like peer-to-peer computing and cloud computing. And in systems of this size, it's inevitable that nodes are going to fail, and they'll need to be replaced, which means that we need reconfigurable distributed services that adapt to system membership changes. And these systems typically incorporate some kind of means of tracking which nodes are online, sometimes as ad hoc. A generic membership service that tracks these changes in system membership is a useful abstraction that can simplify system design. And that's where Census comes in. Census is a platform for building large-scale distributed applications. It provides two services. There's a membership service, which provides all nodes with consistent views of the system membership, and a multicast communication mechanism, which is used both to distribute membership updates and also to distribute data that the application might provide, like configuration updates. And Census is designed to work in the wide area for very large-scale systems with many thousands to millions of nodes, so it takes into account locality and provides fault tolerance. More specifically, the Census membership service works like this. We've divided time up into a sequence of sequential fixed-duration epochs, say one every 30 seconds, and each epoch has associated with it a membership view, which is a list of the nodes in the system, along with their node ID, IP address, location information, and so on, any other information the application might want to include. And Census provides a consistency property, which is that in a given epoch, every node sees exactly the same membership view of the system. And this is an important abstraction that can simplify the design of protocols. For example, in a storage system that partitions data among nodes, it's easy to see how having everyone agree on which nodes are in the system makes life a whole lot easier because then we know who is responsible for what data. And we'll also see how this consistency property simplifies the design of the Census protocol itself. You'll note that I mentioned this consistency property, and I also mentioned earlier that Census is designed for very large systems. And this is relevant because there's usually a trade-off between consistency and scalability in membership services. There are a number of existing systems. Some examples, at one extreme, we have systems based on virtual synchrony, which provide a strict notion of consistency, but typically these systems aren't designed to scale to a large number of nodes. They work usually designed for the scale of maybe hundreds of nodes. And at the other extreme, we have things like distributed hash tables, which are designed to work at extremely large sizes, like millions of nodes, but don't provide any consistency guarantees and about the membership views, and usually don't even provide full views of the system membership. To our knowledge, Census is the first system that provides consistent membership views and is designed for large-scale, wide-area systems. The membership service follows what's fundamentally a pretty simple approach. We designate one node in the system as the leader, and the leader might change every epoch. And whenever a node has a membership change to report, it notifies the leader. These membership changes might be a node that's joining the system, a report of a node failing, leaving, or changing its location. And the leader collects these reports for the duration of the epoch and aggregates them together into an item, which is a summary of all the membership changes that occurred in that epoch. And then it distributes that item to every node in the system. And whenever nodes receive this item, they update their view of the system membership and enter the next epoch. So this is a fairly simple approach, but obviously there's more to this story, given that there's another 20 minutes of this talk. So what are some of the remaining problems? Well, first, it's clearly not possible for the leader to distribute the items with these membership updates and other application multicast data directly to every node in the system. So we'll introduce a multicast mechanism that does this efficiently. And second, once we've eliminated that bottleneck, there are some other bottlenecks that can occur, and we'll discuss a way to reduce the load on the leader with a multi-region hierarchical structure. And finally, we need to worry about fault tolerance, because the leader might fail. So we'll discuss these problems in order, starting with the multicast mechanism. And like I said, it's in a small system, even with a handful of nodes, it becomes rapidly infeasible to have the leader directly send these membership updates to everyone. So we'll need a multicast mechanism to efficiently distribute this membership update. And the application can also use this membership, multicast mechanism to distribute data. And we have the usual goals for this system. We want high reliability. This is very important because nodes in the system might fail, and we need the multicast mechanism to send the membership update that removes them from the system. And we want low overhead, low latency, and fair load balancing. As you're probably aware, there are many existing application-level multicast protocols already. We adapt some ideas from them, but in Census, we use a different approach to construct the multicast overlay. We take advantage of the availability of consistent membership information from the membership service in order to provide a simpler design with lower overhead. Our basic approach is to form a multicast tree, but a single tree isn't going to be enough because it has poor load balancing. Only a small set of nodes are interior nodes in the tree and for data, and also a failure of one of these interior nodes can cause data to be lost at a large set of nodes in their subtree, so it has poor reliability. So we use a topology that has multiple trees, and this topology is adapted from some other multicast systems, most notably Splitstream. We have multiple interior node disjoint trees, which means that each node is going to be an interior node in one tree and a leaf node in all the other trees. And typically, we'll have between 4 and 16 trees. Because membership updates are generally pretty small when the system is stable, and they need to be distributed very reliably, we'll distribute them in full across each tree. The application might also want to distribute some multicast data, as I mentioned earlier. It might want to announce configuration updates from an administrator or broadcast status about the system. So, and these updates, this multicast data might be larger, so we'll erasure code it, say using 4 out of 8 coding, and distribute one fragment on each tree so that data from 4 out of 8 trees is required to reconstruct the message. And this is going to be more reliable and have a fairer load distribution than a single tree. It does involve some additional bandwidth overhead, but we'll show some optimizations later that can reduce that. These trees look something like this. Notice here that we've divided the nodes up by color, and we've given each tree a color. So here we're showing the red tree, which is made up of the red, which has the red nodes as its interior nodes, and the nodes of other colors as its leaves. But in addition to the red tree, with the same set of nodes, there's also a blue tree, where the blue nodes are going to be the interior nodes, and the red ones and the nodes of other colors are the leaves. And of course, with 4 colors, we have 4 trees, and this is going to be a reliable overlay because, as you can see, there are a lot of redundant paths between nodes in the system. So that's the multicast overlay structure, and it's similar to other systems. But what we do differently is how we construct the trees. Typical systems require some kind of distributed protocol for building trees. Census takes a different approach, taking advantage of the consistent membership views provided by the membership service. So the tree structure is given by a deterministic algorithm that runs on the system membership. And because we have consistent views of the system membership, each node will compute the same trees. And this allows us to use a much simpler algorithm. Essentially, what we have is a centralized algorithm that's running in a distributed context, and because of consistent membership views, providing the same results. The way this works is that whenever a node receives the membership update, it updates its view of the system membership, then it recomputes the trees for the new membership, which allows it to find out its children just in time to forward the message on to them. And you'll notice this has no protocol overhead beyond the cost of distributing the membership updates, even when nodes fail. And this is significant because typical multicast protocols involve some kind of distributed tree construction algorithm, and that means that when nodes fail, they have to run some kind of protocol for a node to find a new parent, and then probably later it'll have to run some other protocol to re-optimize the tree for latency and load balancing. And we get this all for free because as soon as we've updated the membership, we can rebuild the tree for the new membership. I'll describe the algorithm we use to construct these trees. So of course, we start with the system membership. And we want these trees to be locality aware, so we're going to use network coordinates. I'll provide a little bit of background about this. These are coordinates provided by a system like Vivaldi. I won't go into how these coordinates are computed, but I gather that you'll hear quite a bit about that in the next talk. And these are a coordinate assigned to each node with the property that the Euclidean distance between two nodes' coordinates is an approximation of the network latency between them. And I've drawn the nodes on these slides, arranged according to their coordinates, so that nodes that are drawn closer to each other will be closer together on the network. For example, they might be located in the same data center. Now, to construct the tree, the first step is to assign each node to a tree, or to color it, and we do this by sorting the nodes by ID and assigning colors round robin. So here we show two trees. So we have the red nodes, which are going to be interior nodes in the red tree, and the blue nodes, which will be leaf nodes in the red tree and interior nodes in their own tree. And I'll focus here on how we build the red tree. The basic approach is pretty simple. We'll be subdividing the coordinate space. So we split the region through its center of mass along its widest axis. And you'll notice that we have one node here that's going to be the root of the tree. And once we've split the region, we'll take the closest red node in each tree, in each subregion, and assign it to be a child of the root. Then we'll repeat this process for the trees rooted at these children, recursively subdividing each region in the same way. And we repeat this process until all of the red nodes have been added to the tree. Once we've have all of the red nodes added to the tree, it's time to add the blue nodes in as the leaves of the tree. And we do this by assigning each one to the closest red node with available capacity. And note that here we allow each red node to have both interior red children and blue leaf children. So that's shown here. And this is how we've constructed the red tree. Note that this is a deterministic algorithm so that all nodes will compute the same trees. And it takes into account locality in the form of network coordinates. We have a few improvements to this basic multicast protocol, which are described in the paper. One is that you might note that we've introduced some bandwidth overhead by sending redundant data, copies of this membership update along each tree, and redundant fragments of application data using erasure coding. And we can reduce this, we eliminate nearly all of this bandwidth overhead by sending the extra copies of the data only when they're necessary in cases of failure. We also introduce a way to reduce the latency of the multicast by choosing which fragments to send based on the expected path length computed using the network coordinates. And we have a mechanism for improving reliability during failures by reconstructing missing data from erasure-coded fragments received on other trees. So that's our multicast mechanism, which deals with the first scalability bottleneck, which is distributing these membership updates. But as the system grows even larger, we run into some more problems. For example, the leader might not be able to process all of the membership update notifications, and we deal with this by introducing a hierarchical structure based on regions. And this approach looks something like this. The purpose here is to improve the scalability by adding a hierarchy to the system. And we begin by dividing the world into location-based regions. And like with the multicast system, we do this by partitioning the coordinate space. The coordinates reflect locality so that nodes in the same region, here I've shown three, ought to be close together. For example, they might be located in the same data center. Now, in addition to having one global leader, we also have one region leader in each region. That's one node designated from each region to be its leader. And now whenever a node has a membership change to report, it will report that to the region leader. And the region leaders are going to aggregate these membership changes for the duration of the epoch and compile them together into a report that describes all of the changes that occurred in that region. And then they'll forward this report to the global leader. And the global leader, as before, will compile all of these reports into a single item describing all of the membership changes that occurred in the system and including any data that the application might want to multicast, and then it will distribute it out to the system. And we distribute this item by having the global leader distribute it to the region leaders who construct multicast trees and multicast it within each region. Now, how did these regions come to be? I showed them as kind of preformed, but in fact, they're formed dynamically. Initially, the system has only one region, and whenever a region grows too large, it's split into two. You might expect this to require a complicated protocol, but like the multicast protocol, it's actually quite simple because Census provides consistent membership views. The global leader constantly monitors the size of regions, and when a node grows too small, it announces in the next item that it's time to split the region. And nodes independently perform the computation to split the region. They divide it across its widest axis through its center of mass and assign its the members of the region either to the old or the newly formed region, depending on their location. And they all have consistent views of the system membership, so they all do the same thing. And there's a similar process that occurs when a region grows too small. It can be merged with a neighboring region in pretty much the same way. So what is all this bias? Having a multi-region structure provides a few scalability advantages. First, there are fewer messages processed directly by the global leader, which can be important in a very large system where there'll be quite a few membership updates or a very dynamic system. There are also fewer wide area communications. Regions are based on locality, so the region leader is likely to be located nearby, say in the same data center as the nodes that it's contacting, and most of the time they're interacting only with the region leader. Only the reports from the region leader to the global leader are wide area communications, whereas previously all membership changes required a report to the global leader, which might have been a wide area communication. It also makes multicast tree computation cheaper because nodes don't have to construct the full multicast tree in other regions, only in their own region. And finally, it can provide a useful abstraction for organizing applications. For example, in a storage system that we're developing that uses cooperative caching, we take advantage of regions so that only nodes in the same region, which are likely to be close together, will share their caches. The region structure allows us to do one more thing, and that's a partial knowledge system. We note that maintaining global membership knowledge is usually a feasible thing to do, and we'll show this in the evaluation, but it still requires all membership updates to be, all membership changes to be reported to every node in the system, and in very large, very dynamic, and or very bandwidth-constrained systems, this becomes too expensive. So we have a partial knowledge variant of the system where each node knows only the membership of its own region, and it has only summary information about the membership of other regions, like the number of nodes in the region, their approximate location, and a few representative members. And this requires a more complicated protocol, and it's not for every application, but it allows the system to scale to even larger sizes. Finally, I should say a few words about fault tolerance. Obviously, having a single global leader and a single region leader per region isn't sufficient because these leaders might fail, and we need the system to be able to survive that. So we'll use a solution based on replication, and we'll largely use standard state machine replication techniques like ViewStamp replication or Paxos with a few optimizations that are described in the paper. And note that we set the replication level in this system based on the expected number of failures at the same time because the membership service will promptly remove nodes that have failed from the system. We also have some optional extensions to the protocol that allow it to tolerate Byzantine failures, where nodes might fail arbitrarily or maliciously. I'll spare you the details of these. They're in the paper. But some of the issues we have to worry about here are that nodes might misbehave in ways that can't be proven bad, or nodes might attempt to join multiple regions at once, or faulty nodes might be disproportionately concentrated in one region. So on to the evaluation. Census is designed to be scalable, so we wanted to test its scalability. We did a deployment on PlanetLab as a proof of concept on 614 nodes, but we were also interested in how the system scaled to even larger sizes, so we used some theoretical analysis and some simulation results to test how it would perform on larger systems. So first, we deployed the system on PlanetLab with 614 nodes, and we configured the system to have one epoch every 30 seconds, and to also, in addition to tracking membership, it multicast 1 kilobyte of data in each epoch. And the first graph shows the reported system membership according to Census over time. This experiment ran for a little over an hour, during which time we artificially failed 10% of the nodes and brought them back about 5 or 10 minutes later, and then later did the same thing with 25% of the nodes. And as we can see, the red line here is the reported system membership. It's usually pretty flat when the system is stable, as you'd expect. There are a few nodes coming and going because some Planet Lab nodes are notoriously flaky. But when we fail first 10% and later 25% of nodes, the membership reacts quickly to this change, both when the nodes leave and rejoin. The second graph shows the mean bandwidth overhead, both upstream and downstream, seen at each node throughout this experiment. And as we can see from the red line, this is typically a fairly low amount. It's about 100 bytes per second. And much of this when the system is stable, and much of this cost comes simply from the size of the multicast data. That is, you know, we're sending 1 kilobyte of data every 30 seconds. So that cost is fixed. That's what's represented by the green line. The overhead beyond that is pretty small. You'll note the spikes when the nodes rejoin the system, and that reflects the fact that when these nodes fail and rejoin, we have to announce the rejoining nodes to the system, and we also need to provide these nodes with the existing system membership. But even so, the bandwidth overhead isn't very high. Even with 150 nodes rejoining the system, we still see only about under 1 kilobyte per second of bandwidth. So hopefully that convinces you that the system does something reasonable on Planet Lab, but we were interested in larger systems, so we did a theoretical analysis of the costs of membership management, and these graphs here show the amount of bandwidth overhead used by membership management as a function of the number of nodes. And here we assume that nodes fail randomly and independently, but we assume a very high churn rate. We've assumed an average node lifetime of 30 minutes, which is on par with what you'd expect in a peer-to-peer system, and you'd expect that a deployment in a data center would be far more stable. So the left graph shows the performance of the system with multiple regions, where everyone still knows the full membership of the system. With about 10,000 nodes, you can see that the global leader requires about 1 kilobyte per second of bandwidth, and the regular nodes about 200 bytes per second. And with 100,000 nodes, it goes up to about 10K and 2K, respectively. On the right, we have the partial knowledge system. This is the variant of the system where nodes know only the full membership of their own region. And even with 100,000 nodes and this very high churn rate, the bandwidth overhead for all nodes is going to be under 1K per second. We also did some simulation studies of the multicast system. So one of our major concerns was reliability, since the system needs to work even when nodes fail. And on this graph, we show on the x-axis the fraction of nodes in the system that have failed, and on the y-axis the number of nodes that are able to successfully receive data. And you'll note on the blue line up here that even with as many as about 70% of the nodes having failed, every node in the system is still able to receive the membership data. That's because the membership data is sent on each of the multicast trees. Application multicast data is erasure-coded, so it's less redundantly distributed. But depending on the coding level we choose, we can still tolerate between 4 and 20% of the failures without having any node that's still functioning fail to receive the data. We also tested the performance of the multicast, which we measured in terms of stretch, which is the ratio of the latency achieved by the multicast system to the ideal unicast latency. And here we used a 1700 node topology based on internet measurements. And this graph is a CDF of the stretch. It's a CDF, so it's hard to read. But the median stretch is about 2, which is similar to the results that are obtained by other multicast systems like Splitstream. And much of the error we encounter is from errors in the network coordinates, where the coordinates don't perfectly reflect network latency. So to summarize, I presented Census, which is a platform for membership management and multicast communication in large distributed systems. Census is designed to provide consistent views of system membership while scaling to extreme sizes and working in the wide area to support future wide-scale distributed applications. Census builds on an efficient multicast mechanism, which is designed to provide high reliability with low overhead. The multicast mechanism and other parts of Census take advantage of the consistent membership views provided by the multicast service to provide high performance while avoiding the complexity of distributed protocols, and we expect that the membership service can also simplify the design of other applications in the same way. Thank you. I'd be happy to take questions.
Hi, this is CQ Tan from IBM Research. So I have some question regarding the consistency of the membership view. Let's say that there are two nodes, they have different versions of the membership view because they have data from different epoch,
sure.
Right? And if they want to compute, for example, a multicast tree locally, let's say they want to broadcast some data, and then they will derive different multicast tree.
Sure, this is definitely a concern that there'll be transient inconsistencies because nodes are in different epochs because of latency in the system. But note that each node knows the epoch in its the number of the epoch it's currently in, so it knows what version of the membership state it's seeing. And if it includes this version number in messages it's sent, then we can ensure consistency between two nodes. So, for example, one node might say that it's in epoch 14, and if this message is received by another node that's in epoch 13, it can wait to delay it can delay processing the message until it's received the new membership update, or it can instruct the failed node, the other node, to resend the message after it receives the update.
Does this imply that a node also has to keep the old views, just in the case that they receive a message with an old epoch number?
It is helpful if it can provide, if it can keep a few recent membership views. This is useful both for that reason and to allow nodes that have failed and rejoined to catch up. But these are typically fairly small.
How do you compare the consistency provided by your system with the virtual synchrony, for example?
Well, this is a very similar notion to virtual synchrony. The virtual synchrony is in some ways more rigorous because it allows other communications by the application to be consistent. For example, that a multicast that each node can send a multicast and be consistent across. And that no view changes will take place during this multicast. And we have some similar properties to that.
I'm not sure. My feeling is that your consistency is weaker than virtual synchrony's consistency because you cannot guarantee the consistency between your view and the operations between nodes. So we can discuss it offline.
Sure.
Take this last. Okay, great. Your question.
Irfan Ahmed, VMware. Interesting work. Look forward to some applications built on top of this to actually evaluate how strong it is. A couple of quick questions. One, is there some relationship between the epoch, the duration of an epoch, and the scale of the system?
There is slightly increased overhead as we use shorter epochs, simply because we need to send one multicast. We need to send these multicasts periodically. But it doesn't directly affect the scalability of the system, just this
okay,
fixed
and
cost.
In one of your results diagrams, you actually had shown a quick convergence in the number of nodes in the system.
Right.
But still there was a lag. Can you
right.
can you talk a little bit
sure,
about
that,
where that the lag
came from? Arises from the fact that nodes need to be detected as failed, and to do this we use timeouts. So there's a brief lag in doing that, and then there's also a delay of one epoch while this message is being broadcast.
All right, let's thank the speaker again and get ready for our next speaker.